Welcome to the show, Amateur Opinions. Brand new week, brand new episode. Thank you for joining us. I am with a guest, new guest, second feature on the podcast. Got my man, Batsy Rai. Batsy, how you doing, bro?
Hola, I'm good. How you doing?
Doing all right. Thanks. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
For sure, for sure. How's it going? How's life, work? Just like in general, how's that going?
It's going well. It's going well. I'm just trying to set new targets for myself. Push myself a little bit more.
Like career targets? Like work-related targets?
Yeah, work-related targets.
Okay. How drastic are those targets?
Wouldn't say drastic. They're just new experiences. So in that regard, it might be drastic, but It's a fun challenge nonetheless.
Okay. Anything specific or are you keeping it to yourself?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get out there more, network more, out of my comfort zone.
Okay, okay. What kind of prompted that?
Just the realization that maybe I wasn't pushing myself enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted something new. So yeah, I'm reaching out to design teams around the world and trying to impart what I've learned but also learn from them.
Yeah, because I remember you had a some kind of talk, right? Like a Zoom, was it a conference of some sort that you had?
Yeah.
Is that part of it?
Yes, that's absolutely part of it. Okay. That was my first one, actually. Mm. It was a design meetup.
Right.
Yeah, it was a good experience. Showed me that I can do it, so I'm going to try pushing to do more.
Yeah. Because I remember you mentioned this one interview you had a while back where you said you realized that you didn't know
what I was talking about. Yeah, that was years ago. Yeah,
that was years ago. So is that also kind of still in that headspace where you're trying to kind of just keep getting better in a way, or is it different to the experience you had that time?
No, I think it's different. So now it's more about realizing that what I know some people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to reach out and actually start to help people in the design community, especially back home, like in South Africa.
Yeah,
a lot of the things that we do here and in America and Europe haven't been like implemented back home yet, so I'm also reaching out to people back home.
Okay. That's dope. And another interesting thing that's been going on, I mean, especially I was I think I've mentioned this dude to you. It's a dude called Dave Portnoy.
Nope.
So he's there's a website called company called Barstool Sports.
Yes,
you've heard of it, right?
Yeah.
So that dude, he's one of those guys, like, he's a media personality. He's always doing, internet personality, he's always doing stuff. So one thing he did during this corona lockdown thing was he started day trading. And basically, you know, buying stocks and selling and all that stuff. And he actually made quite a killing.
And now, how much is quite a killing?
Well, he's rich. So he put in, like, I think, like a few hundred thousands. So, you know, if it's even a small percentage will be quite substantial. But I'm not sure what the exact amount he made, but apparently he did really make a killing. And, like, you know, finance people were kind of pissed that this novice kind of, because he's one of those, he's just a smart guy who's kind of asks people the right questions and then gets information and then does his thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, like proper pros were kind of pissed. And now he's getting into crypto, and he got those, you know, those Facebook twins.
Yes.
Yeah. So those guys are crypto billionaires, or whatever. That's what they're called now.
Yeah, they got into Bitcoin very early. Those guys.
Very early.
The Winklevoss twins.
Winklevoss twins. Yeah. So he got those guys. He made a video and all, and then he got them. He was like asking them questions about crypto, and then like what to invest in and how to do it, that kind of thing. And he's kind of put in money into that now as well, just like playing around basically.
It's interesting you bring up crypto, because
I was
researching asset classes, and we'll get to assets probably a little later on. But crypto was actually the best performing asset class this year.
Yeah, let's get into it. So what exactly is an asset class?
Well, what is an asset is the more pertinent question.
Right. What's an asset?
So an asset is something that's not a liability, right? So it doesn't cost you money. It's like asking what is cold, and the opposite of cold is hot, right?
Mm.
So if something costs you money, like if you buy a car, it's not making you any money, unless of course you're using it for Uber. But even then, for it to become an asset, it needs to make more than it's costing draining. You, right?
Yeah. I mean, the moment you drive out of the lot, you've already lost money. Yeah.
Yeah. So assets are basically just things you invest in. So an asset could actually be yourself as well, because you invest in yourself through educating yourself, your financial education. Asset could be stock portfolio. An asset could be crypto. An asset could be property. An asset could be a lot of things that it makes money for you when you're sleeping, basically. Is what you call like a real asset.
Yep.
So there's Robert Kiyosaki that did The Rich Dad Poor Dad. His name always comes up when people are talking about things like this.
Mm.
And he argues that your personal home, the place where you live, isn't an asset. Because you know how people say, oh, buying property is an asset. It is, but it depends what it's doing for you. So if you paying for your where you're living and it's a 30-year mortgage and you're not making any money from where you're living, sure, it's appreciating value, assuming you're going to sell it in 30 years. But yeah, he argues that where you live isn't really an asset.
Okay.
So yeah, those are assets.
So does he kind of discourage it, or he's just saying don't look at it as an asset?
He just says don't look at it as an asset. Yeah.
Because I have heard some people kind of discouraging.
I'm one of those people. Like I don't believe in buying where you live.
Buying where you live. Oh, you're part of that class.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I heard I was listening to this dude called Grant Cardone, but he has a business where he buys property to kind of lease. So like big complexes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he claims that where he stays, he rents. Right?
Yeah.
So it's been something I've been kind of. Kind of like thinking about as well.
Yeah.
So what's your thought about that one?
Well,
in terms of the reasoning.
For me, it's more just a personal thing where I want to see a lot of the world. So I don't see myself living anywhere for an extended period of time. So why would I buy somewhere where I'm going to live? I'd rather be nimble. I'm a nomad, and my wife and I are similar in that respect, where we're nomads. We want to live wherever we want to live, you know.
And you want it to be possibly a snap decision. If
this weekend, let's move to Singapore, kind of thing.
So mobility is a big thing, and having a house.
Yeah, it ties you down, and it ties you down for a very long period of time, and it also there's a few things wrong from an investment point of view. With buying where we live, at least from my perspective, it's polarizing because people have a lot of different opinions about this. But the problem I find with buying where you live is no one ever wants to live in a crappy place.
Yeah.
And space is never enough, right? So you're always trying to upgrade. If you start off living in an apartment, you're going to want to buy a house. Then you have more kids, you want a bigger house. It costs too much to buy a property that I'm going to want to live in, because the area has to be nice. It needs to be near certain amenities. So I'm looking at, whereas an investment property would cost me X amount, a place I'm going to buy probably costs me 4X if I'm going to want to live there.
Mm.
So that 4X, saving a deposit on a mortgage on a property that's 4X what I would typically buy as an investment, it's an insurmountable task. So even if you want to then move out and rent it out, you find it's a lot harder to find to rent out places that are kind of large family homes or whatever it is. So it's for me, it's just not a good investment.
And with what you're saying, let's say you don't end up going for the 4X one, if you decide to buy, right? And then you buy something, you know, further away from the city that costs you 1X. And then you want to move, like you said. So let's say, you know, you try sell it. It's a bit difficult. And then you try get someone to rent. Now, because it's further from town, because it's cheaper. No one's going to want to live there. So it's going to be very difficult for you to actually end up making money from it. So I can see why Robert thinks it's or believes it's math adds up. Okay. Cool. So in terms of investments then, yeah, you mentioned investment classes. So I'm assuming property would be a class, crypto would be an asset class, is that right?
Yeah.
So what are the different asset classes? Well, you said crypto was number one.
Yeah, it was the best performing this year. So the ones that I'm kind of focusing on are kind of tangible assets. Well, okay, I lie. I'm also doing stock trading. So those aren't tangible. Right. But what I would call ultimate assets are property and precious minerals like gold and silver. So actual physical gold and silver coins, not like trading an ETF that's like a gold index that follows the price of gold.
Yeah.
Actual physical gold you're holding, yeah. Because gold and crypto were the best performing asset classes.
Because I see in movies where they have gold bars and I never really pay any mind to it in terms of it being an actual investment vehicle in a way.
Yeah.
So what's the thought process behind that?
Behind gold being. Yeah. So I like how we're gonna be talking about this guy a lot, Robert Kiyosaki. So I like the way he puts it. So he calls gold and silver God's money. Because it was created by God, not people.
Mm.
And it was here long before we were even here. And as he puts it, it'll be here long after we're gone. So, and it's a finite resource. So it's the fact that it's not man-made means there's a finite amount of it. So it'll always be valuable. Because there's not an infinite amount of it. Whereas money, we print money every day. Like the US is printing trillions right now.
Right.
It's fabricated, right?
Mm.
So that's why it actually loses value over time. Whereas gold and silver, there's a finite amount of it. It appreciates over time.
And I remember you mentioned off air that money used to be kind of in parallel with gold.
The gold standard. Yeah.
Can you explain that part?
So the US was okay. Let me see how to put this properly. So the US was pegged to gold, but it was taken off the gold standard in, I believe it's the 70s, where they actually made it illegal to own physical gold. I haven't kind of researched why the backstory on why it was actually made illegal and why they took it off the gold standard. But that's the turnaround point where the US dollar basically became what it is today. It's hard to explain unless you're a banker, but I'll do the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
So they took it off the gold standard, so it wasn't based on gold anymore, which and then they made gold illegal. So ever since then it's one of those things where gold is probably the best investment you'll ever make. Because just like people argue stocks always go up, same thing applies with gold. But gold is a lot more reliable an investment than stocks are, because it's not man-made.
It's gonna be there. It's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anything can happen to a stock.
Yeah, and I didn't believe him until I saw the results for this year. So, the fact that gold performed better than any other asset class, save of course for crypto, but I think that's because crypto like crashed big time a little while ago. So it's kind of coming back up. That's why, like, you see the percentages are quite high. But yeah, so gold is the ultimate. And you know how you were saying about movies and how you see gold bars in movies?
Yeah.
So just to kind of quantify just how valuable gold is. So if you take two, what's the biggest rand coin?
Five rand.
Yeah. So a gold coin is probably about 1.5 times the size of a 5 rand coin.
Okay.
And it's worth $200. $2,000. That one coin. So yeah, you can imagine. It takes you a while to kind of amass gold coins because they're so expensive.
Yeah.
But in the long term, yeah, it's the best investment you can make.
And how do people typically keep these gold coins?
I would keep them in the bank. So the security deposit box, that kind of thing. Deposit box. Yeah. Don't keep them at home.
I wonder how much that gold bar is. Like that one in movies.
Yeah, imagine how many gold coins that is. Sheesh. So you're probably looking at like 100K or more for one gold bar. And we just watched Tenet.
Yeah.
Sato had a ton of gold. That's why he was a billionaire.
Exactly. Okay. Damn. So, okay. So gold, crypto. And are you planning on getting into crypto?
No, I won't get into crypto.
At all? Not even a little bit? I'm not
fascinated, nah.
Why don't you just get like a little bit? You know, something that won't really kill you.
Because getting a little bit isn't investing.
But it's yeah. I mean, getting a little bit in 2005 ended up being a lot.
But it's not 2005.
Yeah, it's 2020, but you don't know what's happening in 2030.
I don't really care.
I mean, what you could also do is buy. Okay, I'm not even a crypto like expert, but you know, a cheap crypto.
Yeah.
You know, where you can get like a bunch of coins and then you just leave them.
It depends what your goals are. So my investment strategy is to invest, like I said, in these tangible things. Mm-hmm. So it's your property and your gold and silver investments. So it depends what your strategy is. There's absolutely nothing wrong with crypto. If you feel like it's going to be around for 10-20 years plus, go for it.
I mean, you could argue crypto is tangible.
How?
It's not tangible. It's finite. Okay, that's those are two different. Those are two different. I know.
But the thing is, like, what makes crypto valuable? Human beings can decide tomorrow that Bitcoin isn't valuable anymore. Like what makes, it's just like what we're saying about the US dollar. What made it valuable was that it was it was pegged against an actual gold standard.
Yeah.
So when they took it off the gold standard, it ceased to become as valuable as it once was.
Yes.
Right. People, yeah, it's only as valuable as we perceive it to be.
Right. It's just the perception.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem with an asset like that. In
but gold, mind. There's no perception there. It's just
gold is gold. Gold is what it is. It's always been. Yeah. It always will be.
And you mentioned stocks. Have you, like, what kind of dabbling have you done? Have you done there?
Yeah. So the reason we went heavy into stocks is because of the coronavirus. So for us, it's actually been a good thing, and I know it's affected a lot of people. So, yeah, I'm not trying to say it is a good thing, but yeah. it was in some ways. So the markets crashed quite a bit, and I was actually shocked. What's today? Monday? Last week, when I was checking the graph for the S&P 500 and one of the portfolios we're following, the ETFs we're trading in, the VTI, it's actually recovered from the point where it fell in March and surpassed it. So you know how the graph for the stock market is, if you zoom out 20 years, it's going up, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you look at end of last year, it was going up in that same fashion until March when Corona hit and it dropped significantly.
Yeah.
Right. Now that point, that apex point that it was before it dropped, we've passed that point now.
They recovered.
It's recovered significantly. I thought it was going to take like at least 6 months. like the entire year, because it was one of those things they were saying, yeah, without a vaccine, the world's shut down because people aren't going to travel. It's going to be tough. So we actually not really expecting returns until probably next year. But it's, yeah, it's, markets have recovered and actually surpassed where they were.
And which stock exchange are you dealing with?
So we're doing ETFs, and
what does that mean?
Electronic traded fund.
Okay. So it's basically
a like an amalgamation of a lot of stocks. So you're diversifying just by virtue of holding an ETF. So like as an example, the one I mentioned, the VTI, it tracks about 1,000 Fortune 500 companies.
And this is worldwide.
America.
Fortune 500, that's like American companies, right?
Yeah, it tracks a ton of them. So it's biased towards tech specifically. So it means we've got stock in Amazon, Netflix, Apple, Samsung, Google, etc. And those are just like your top five, where they'll skew a little bit more towards the big guys like Amazon and them. And then it'll kind of peter down to holding stocks in a lot of other smaller, successful American companies. Mm. So that's one stock, that's one ETF we invested in. And then there are others that followed the Asian market. And they're like kind of like in the emerging, it tracks emerging markets. So you're looking at your South Americas, your Japan, China, etc. So yeah, it's quite a diversified portfolio. It even tracks property markets in the US. We've got one that does that too. So it's quite diversified.
And in terms of returns, you mentioned you'll probably get returns next year.
No, that's what we thought.
Oh, that's what you thought.
But the market's recovered. So as an example, we started buying that ETF when it was around 160 something per share. Mm-hmm. $160 per share. Now it's up to 180 something per share, I believe.
Okay.
So yeah, and we thought it was only gonna like recover. We thought it was gonna keep going down slightly or recover a little bit, but not past where it was.
Not past where you were.
I did not think it would pass where it was. Just also judging on when I did research on previous crashes, your 2008 crash, the Great Depression crash, those crashes, they took like 6, 7, 8 months to recover. But yeah, for some reason, I think it's just testament to the times we're living in. It's a little different now because the major companies in play are tech companies.
And they actually did well.
Yeah, yeah, they did well. So that might contribute to why it's recovered so quickly.
Yeah. And what's your strategy in terms of actually, you know, getting money out of the, is it EFT?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the ETF strategy? ETF, sorry.
We're not going to take money out.
Okay.
Ever. Yeah.
So how does that work? Like you just leave it there until,
yeah,
and then you like kind of like give it to your daughter,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
And does she take anything out of it, or she's not supposed to? How does it work? Like at what point do you actually kind of get the spoils?
Why do you think white people are so rich? They don't sell their assets.
Yeah, but what?
Your dividends. You live off the dividends from your investments.
Okay, so let's talk about the dividends then. So the dividends, is this, does the ETF also...
Yeah, yeah.
And is this annual?
No, it's more than that. Depends on the different companies give out dividends in different kind of... in different periods. But we're... Right now, because we haven't invested that much, our dividends are like... $12, 41 cents here and there, $16 once in a while. So it's not money you can live off. But if you're talking about generational wealth, and if you're talking about investing in the stock market regularly, like monthly, then there will come a time in 20, 30 years when my daughter takes over, when she'll actually be getting maybe a few hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars in dividends.
Okay, because that's what I was asking in terms of like, so maybe I just didn't understand exactly how the ETFs work. So you don't sell any part of the stocks on the EFT, right? Where do the dividends come from?
So dividends are basically companies sharing profits with shareholders.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and if you own shares, you're an owner.
Right.
So it's one of those things. Joe Rogan, I think there was one podcast where they were talking about this, where you need to stop being a consumer and stop being an owner.
Mm.
Right? Everyone has, most people I know have an iPhone, but do they own Apple? Probably not. I actually can say I own part of Apple
because
I've got stocks in Apple.
Yeah.
And when people buy iPhones, Apple posts a profit, they give out dividends to shareholders. I can actually say, hey, I'm getting a dividend from Apple. And that's kind of where the mindset you need to be in to become an owner, not a consumer. And it goes back to that whole assets thing. So buying shares in these companies, it's an asset because it's making money for me even when I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it's not a lot right now, it's like $16, 41 cents. But the whole point I'm saying why we don't sell is we want to get to a point where those dividends are substantial, and you also want to reinvest your dividends. So you don't want to, like, at an early stage, start spending that 41 cents.
Yeah,
you want to put it back, keep buying. It's a perpetual kind of machine that runs itself.
Yeah, so you end up, you know, making more and more at a faster rate.
Yeah,
as time goes. All right. I like that. Okay. And then, is there anything else?
Yeah. So it's really just about the reason I wanted to kind of come on here just to speak about it, and maybe someone out there, it's something that someone needed to hear. Just about changing your life. You know, a lot of us didn't get anything from anyone. We're kind of starting from scratch. If your parents didn't have like a ton of money, and they didn't leave you a ton of property, or your parents didn't have a company that makes a ton of money that you inherit, a lot of us are starting from scratch. And you need to kind of get in that mindset of, how am I going to break this cycle? Like, what am I going to leave? Even if you don't have kids, how am I going to live my life? Am I going to be able to retire early? You know?
Right.
So it's kind of getting in that mindset as well. And again, looking back at the coronavirus and what it's done to society, there's also been a lot of opportunities born out of that. It's the reason why Bezos is now like worth over $200 billion. At a time where things are probably the worst they've ever been in recent memory, at least in our lifetimes.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just about changing your mindset, doing a bit of research, realizing that you yourself are an asset, so you can educate yourself. And I like one thing I also wanted to mention is the mentality that every dollar you have is an employee. So I don't know, like, how many people think like that. So every dollar you have, or every rand you have, you should consider as your employee. So every dollar you have, or every rand you have, needs to go out there and find more friends, and then come back with those friends. It's supposed to work for you. And I don't know, like, what's your take on that? Like, how do you see the money you have, whether it's in your bank account, or like, how do you view your cash?
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is true. I mean, this is theoretically speaking, I haven't actually done any investing at all, but it's something you've been preaching to me, and I'm definitely gonna do. But one thing I heard on this other video was like you shouldn't have like a ton of cash in your bank account.
Yeah.
That was one of the things.
Especially not for extended periods of time. It's fine to have a ton of cash if you what you're planning to do is buy something tangible with that cash,
right?
And then start the cycle again. Like for example, for us, it's in a cycle of like 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we purge, and then like by buying like property or something, and then you start again, saving up, exactly. Purge, save up. So there is a place and time for banks, but yeah, I wouldn't save money in a bank for like 2 years or whatever.
Yeah, because yeah, you're not really doing much much with it.
Yeah. You actually there's an argument that you're actually losing money by keeping it in the bank. Because your interest rate typically isn't as high as what the inflation rate is in savings accounts.
And the bank is making a killing off your money.
Yeah, because they've got a ton of it.
Yeah.
They've got like a million depositors putting in cash. So they've got like billions that they can play around with. You only have thousands.
Yeah, and apparently they don't even keep the cash. They
flip it. Yeah,
flip it real quick.
Yeah, of course.
So that's why if you try, like, you know, I've watched movies where a guy wants to kind of take out a lot of money or something. And
the bank doesn't have it.
Yeah, the bank doesn't have it. So that's what this guy was saying. He was saying, like, you shouldn't keep your money in the bank, like all of it. You know, yeah. You need to be, because the bank doesn't even keep that your money in the bank.
Yeah.
So you need to kind of.
So I was looking up silver prices as an example. So silver is probably where I'll start because it costs significantly less than gold. Like each silver coin will be like in the 20-30 buck range compared to like the 2000 buck range.
Okay.
And if you look at the stats for silver, it's in the past 20 years, the price of silver has gone up by 450%.
Holy crap.
In the past 5 years, it's gone up by 84%. In the past 1 year alone, it's gone up by 50%. In the past 6 months, it's gone up by 58%. So if you had bought, like 1,000 rand of silver 6 months ago, mm-hmm. you'd have 1,500 bucks right now.
I guess that's why they say the best time to invest is right now.
It always is, yeah. Especially that's why it's important to think of assets, because yes, you might be buying it high. So someone said this to me yesterday when I was talking about to them about gold. So I was like, you should buy gold. Then they're like, yeah, but the price of gold is high. I'm saying, yeah, it's high, but a year from now, it's going to be higher.
Right.
And that's the whole point.
It's not going to go down.
Exactly. That's the whole point. You buy it because it's valuable.
Is there a chance that it goes down? Like, what would have to happen for that to happen? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what?
If we came up with a way to manufacture gold,
that's the only way.
In a factory, then yes. Then just like what happened with pearls, right? Pearls became worthless because the Japanese started culturing pearls in factories and getting a ton of pearls that weren't artificial. They were real pearls, just that they were made in a factory.
Mm.
So they weren't as valuable as they were. So if we figure out how to manufacture gold in factories, which I don't know why you'd bother, because we've already got fake gold anyway,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's no real advantage because we've got it already. We've got fake gold.
Yeah.
So it exists, but it still didn't take away from the valuable nature of gold, which is testament actually to how valuable gold is.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think, yeah, the percentages you're talking about. And the graphs are just, they don't dip.
Huh? They do dip.
I mean, but like slightly though, right?
No, but sometimes by a bit.
It's a long game.
You don't buy it to sell, remember?
Yeah.
You don't buy it to sell. So the reason I, like, my strategy is going to be buy property, then use profits from that property to buy gold.
Mm.
Then when I retire, I live off my property income, and then like I can sell a bit of gold now and again if I want to spoil myself, like buy a Ferrari or something. Yeah. Then I'd like, yeah, but I'm not gonna do anything as stupid as buying a Ferrari. But if I want to travel,
please not right now.
Yeah, no, I not, mean before, probably not ever. Eh?
But like before you maybe not buy, but like, you know, rent for like.
Yeah, I can rent one, yeah, if I want. For
I think that's actually anything. The way to do it. Actually,
yeah. I was watching Ballers.
Yeah,
and what DJ says in, I think it was episode 2, season 1, because I just started. He says if it doesn't drive, if it drives, floats, flies, or fucks, lease it. So yeah, I'm gonna live by those words.
Yeah, because that it's actually something I've been thinking of, like in terms of buying a car. I really struggle to like, you know, think of a reason to do it, especially right now for me, right? And I was thinking if I need a car, like for some reason that weekend, then I'd rather, you know, rent for that,
yeah,
you know, rent it and then I'm done for the month or whatever. And also at the same time, I don't want to stay in the outskirts of like town.
Yeah.
Right, which is further where you'd probably now need a car to move around. So you kind of, you know, do the math where you're like, it's first of all, it's nicer to stay closer to the town, and you know, obviously you spend more, but you also don't get to spend on a car, right?
Yeah.
And all and everything that comes with it, like insurance, repairs,
yeah,
fuel, all that stuff, right? Because you have, you know, good enough public transport, you know, with the bus or the train or whatever.
So this is one of those things Robert Kiyosaki also speaks about, like where and when to buy your, or when and with what to buy your car.
Okay.
So his example is when he and his wife needed new cars, they only upgraded once their investments could afford them to upgrade. So in other words, and this is, it's one of those principles that I think is worth mentioning here, where, okay, I guess I have to use his terminology, even though it just sounds weird saying it, how the rich buy things with their assets. The rich have their assets buy things for them. And the rich also protect their money in very interesting ways. And one of the interesting ways was what most people do is they work 9 to 5, right, at a job.
Mm.
And they use their salary to buy their Mercedes.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas how you... not everyone that you see driving around in a Mercedes bought it with their salary. The other way of doing it... it's instead of going out and splurging on a Mercedes, stock up on assets. And your returns from those assets, and if you set up your estate properly, then you're buying those assets as a corporation or a company, right? You set up a company that buys assets. And the reason you do that is, again, using his terminology, is something that the rich people understand is... okay, now I'm losing my train of thought. So when you look at it from a tax perspective, what you're doing when you're buying your Mercedes with your salary is you get your salary, part of it, in fact most of it goes to tax, a good chunk goes to tax, and then with whatever's left over, you're buying your Mercedes.
Mm.
How it works for companies is, and it, this is one of those things that why I recommend people read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I feel like I should have read that book sooner. And I think our dad even told us to read that book.
Yeah.
I really should have read it sooner because it switches on things in your mind that makes so much sense. It's unbelievable. So coming back to the point, whereas an individual buys... something like a Mercedes with pre-tax money, how it works for companies is a company makes money, spends, and then pays tax on whatever's left. So if I have a company that's buying property and I'm getting rental income, I can use that rental income to purchase a car as part of my expenses for running that company, because I need to go around, check on my properties, etc. I need to scout around for new properties. So a car is something that I need in that equation. And it can be written off as a business expense. So I can use the money I make from the company, buy whatever car I want, right? Because it's all about how much the company can not only afford to buy, but again, what are your goals? So I can either buy a Mercedes or I can buy a Prius, whatever, right? Mm. Prius actually costs more than a Mercedes.
Mm.
Yeah, that thing is freaking expensive. It costs more than a C-Class in I didn't realize.
Why do people like kind of diss it in like on of the TV? Way it looks. Oh, okay. it's one of those eco-friendly cars.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but yeah. Damn, it's a premium car. I was surprised it costs more than a C-Class. Anyway.
Okay.
So I buy my car using the company money, and then I only pay tax on what's left.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a very smart way of doing it, because you're paying less tax, but you're using your company's funds as anything your company spends on as a business expense is a tax write-off.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the reason I'm saying all of this is if I'm ever to buy a car, it'll probably be in that manner where I'm buying one as from my company's expense kind of, and it's for running the business because I'm retired and that's what I do now.
Yeah.
Not like drive around, driving a Benz with pre-tax or post-tax money, which comes back to the point of it's a liability for you,
because
mm-hmm. you keep having to spend your post-tax money for the upkeep. Whereas if I buy it under the company has to sort it out, not me.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not spending any of my money. It's all
pre-tax.
Yeah.
Pre-tax funds from the company. Hey, man. Thank you so much for spitting all that. All that
hopefully it was helpful.
All that truth. And
yeah, it's changed my life.
So moral of the story is read Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Invest in yourself.
And yeah. you know, get some jewels there and basically invest right now.
Yeah, the sooner you start the better.
Yeah. Especially these long term type of investments. Okay. Now I like that.
Any good investment is a long term investment, I feel. Otherwise, you're just rolling the dice.
You never. Yeah, know. Yeah. I mean, there's the whole day trading thing, you know. But that's more of a. Would you call that an investment, or it's like? So, it's almost not an investment, right? It's kind of like a.
It is. I don't know how to classify it.
Yeah.
I guess buying stocks, it's an asset. It is an investment because it appreciates in value, I guess.
But
you're rolling the dice.
Yeah, it's more like it's like gambling almost in a way. Yeah.
And what they say is, I know they're again, this is like a polarizing point of view, but people that are pro ETFs, the reason they say ETFs are better investment than day trading is because over the long term, people that trade ETFs perform better than day traders.
Right.
So they make more money over like an extended period of time than day traders do.
Okay. That's about it. Yeah, pretty much. Thanks so much for coming through, man. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Definitely have you on again.
There's a friend of mine I wanted to have a call with, actually. So we'll have a chat with her and see if she wants to come on the show. Because this is what she does. She tries to advocate for people that are previously disenfranchised, like us black people, who don't really have like generational wealth or don't have that financial education knowledge. So it should be a great person to come in, and because she does a lot of this on Twitter.
Okay.
So yeah, it'd be great to have her on. We'll reach out to her.
For sure, man. Appreciate that. Cool. So guys, as usual, just subscribe, like, share, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Do you have anything you want to plug at all? Like something? Or you're good?
No, I'm good.
You're not looking.
I'm getting my dividends from Apple. I'm good.
Okay. Cool. So these are amateur opinions. If you like them, you can take them. If you don't, you can leave them. Check out next week. Peace.
Peace.